Welcome to Hello Universe, a podcast about spirituality in our everyday lives. We're your co-hosts, Kylie and Eva.
Hi, it's Kylie.
And it's Eva.
Welcome back to another episode of Hello Universe.
We have a good one for you guys today. I mean, they're always good, but we just finished recording it. So we're still on that, like the high and the buzz of being like, just ending a really great conversation.
True. Also, it's with one of my very best friends in the entire universe. So I'm biased, but it's, I mean, as I said in the show, it just made me so happy to be like, oh, like, you know, the image that I have is like when you're a kid and you're like playing with dolls and you're like, hi, doll that I love. Meet this other doll that I love. My daughter's newly into playing with dolls. All I'm trying to say is that it made me really happy to have you and Gina meet.
Yeah, I've been hearing about Gina for forever. And it's cool to meet, like, you know, another one of your like spiritual friends.
Yeah. And like to see people that you love, like have fun together. It's just a gift. So dear listeners, you can listen to learn more about Gina in a moment, but before we go there, Eva, what's going on with you in your little corner of the world and in your business?
Well, my corner of the world is freaking hot and warm right now, which is bananas. Like it's I'm not complaining. I know this is like ultimately way better. I'm happy. I'm very happy about it. It's just abnormally, it's like 85 to 89 for freaking March. And I'm happy I get to wear shorts. I think it just makes me nervous because I'm like, oh my God, what does this mean for summer? Because once summer comes, that's going to be like, you know, my equivalent of winter, but we'll see. Anyway, other than that, things are good. Things are good. Yeah. Well, let's talk about, okay. So I want to talk about awakening because I'm in the second week of the launch, which means this is the second week that you can sign up. And next week will be the last week that you can sign up. If you don't already know, Awakening is my 5-week spiritual growth, spiritual embodiment course for spiritual seekers who want to not just like think about spirituality, but who actually want to be more spiritual. And I think sometimes it's funny, like I think that's a thing that people get tripped up on. We think a lot about spirituality, we intellectualize it, but then we actually forget like, well, what does it actually mean to be embodied as a spiritual person? Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, that's like what I do. That's my jam. These are the things that I love talking about. And ultimately, being an embodied spiritual person also helps, coincidentally, with the anxiety, with the stress, with the disconnection from the self and not having self-trust or feeling disconnected from other people. So this course is really designed to help you, yeah, experience all of those things, more embodiment, more peace, more awareness, more presence through, I think, the spiritual attitudes and exercises and mind experiments that we're going to do in this course. And it's something that I've really excited about, super proud of. If you've been listening to the podcast, you know that like last year was my first year time launching it. So this is the second time. And it was a really beautiful experience in round one. And I'm really excited to share it with you guys for round two.
Here's my question for you. Because here's the thing that I think happens a lot is that there's like so many people out there who are, you know, creating these cool things and people are listening and they're nodding along. They're like, yeah, that course sounds awesome. Yep. Cool. But like, speak to the person, like what is the thing that you would say to the person who's like, okay, I think I'm interested. It's like kind of like nodding, they're driving the car, they're nodding along. They're like, yeah, that sounds cool. Versus like, no, you need to go sign up for this course. If you're the one driving your car, nodding your head, like that means it's for you, right? Like, does that question make sense?
No, wait, what's the question?
I'm answering the question and asking it to you at the same time. So I guess what I'm trying to say is like, what would you say to the person who's like considering it, who's like trying to decide if it's for them or if it's just like a general thing?
Okay, that's a really good question. I think if you're considering it and you're really, but you're like on the fence because you're not sure, I would say, honestly, I would say too, but I think the problem with, how do I want to put this? There's an opportunity here for actually developing skills and mindsets and like learning how to apply this into your everyday life in like a very practical, down to earth way. That's like, I've taken all this like stuff that I feel like is abstract and I've done my like, you know, earth sign magic thing, which I've grounded it into being like so accessible, so practical. I think some of the things that people have said, you know, everyone ultimately said in this course, in the feedback that I got, was I'm able to take these like really abstract ideas and make them simple somehow and completely accessible. Cause I think that's just like how my brain works. And so it's like, they're not just these airy fairy ideas. It's like, no. Like you're going to walk away from this class having a new perspective on life, a new attitude on life. You're going to like respond to stressful situations differently.
And a toolbox too, right? So like 2 months later, when your boss is a jerk, like you have like these very tangible things that you've gifted them.
Yeah. I think it's like, yeah, it's a mix of like tangible tools, but also like it's a consciousness expansion. Mm-hmm. Like you step into a different level of consciousness where you're just not going to respond to that situation in the same way anymore because you're just seeing it differently. It's just not the same. Like you are different. And so you're like, oh, well, you know, a month ago I would have freaked out. Everyone has a different reaction. Maybe you would have been insecure. You would have taken it personally. You just have a broader perspective on life where you're like, oh, that just like, isn't so much of a thing anymore. And it's true liberation. Like this is what I want for all people. And this is what the course is intended for, especially for my homegirls out there who I can relate to, who struggle with overwhelm and overthinking and intellectualizing. Like you guys are my peeps because I speak your language.
Yes.
So, yes. And also if you want to do this in community with other people, other like-minded down-to-earth people who are on the spiritual path, who you can learn from their lived experiences and get your questions answered from me. I think that community element of it is so important and heartwarming, and lets you know that you're not alone, which I think is really, yeah, helpful on this kind of path. So Yes. If you're interested, you can DM me on Instagram and ask me your questions, or you can sign up directly at evaliao.com.
Love
it. Yay. All right. What about you, Kylie? What's going on in your world and what do you want to share with us today?
Our weather is also increasingly warmer, which I'm very happy about. And also I shared last week about how I feel like I had this really big inner shift around safety. And it's shown up this week of like, I found it a lot more enjoyable to play with my kids, which has been really cool because that's usually something that like I want to be able to do, but like, it, you know, my thinking mind gets in the way and I pick up my phone or I find some chore to do, or like, I'm kind of like not present even though I'm sitting. Like playing with kids is like kind of hard. Like especially when it's like every day, like, you know, when it's a thing that's a lot, but I want to enjoy it more. And I've noticed that this past week, like I've been like really actually playing with them and having fun doing it a lot more often, and that feels like really cool medicine. So that's been really great.
And
I also wanted to like give that as like an update because I feel like you can come along and be like, I had this huge like kind of, it felt like this huge personal shift. And then it's like, well, wait, what happened? You know, like, anyway, so that happened. And then my business, as a lot of you know, I have a self-study course, Learn to Read the Akashic Records. I taught it live a couple times and then I turned it into a self-study course. And I initially launched it at an intro price of $97. And then because it's me, I left it at the intro price for 4 months.
Yeah, for way too long.
Because I just like started doing other things and got excited about those. And I was like, that was always supposed to be like a like 3 week special. Mm-hmm. So it is in its final moments at $97 and then it will go to its regular price of $222. So if you've been interested in signing up for this course, you should do it now. If you've been interested in learning how to read the Akashic Records and you feel like a little bit of structure and support and some guided meditations would help you, then this course is a really great way to do that.
And I'm going
to
say, I would say the same thing about my course with Kylie's. It's like one, so wait, are the videos recorded where you're still seeing like the other?
It's
it's just me. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. So it's not, I took the content. I took like the information that I like mm-hmm. learned in how to yeah. structure a course. And then I made a version of it that's like a bunch of 15 to 20 minute modules. So it's like all kind of like bite size. Like you could, honestly, you could do the course in like a Saturday mm-hmm. afternoon, or you could do it like as something that you like parse out over a week and some things you might yeah. want to revisit. Awesome. So
yeah. Well, as someone who's taken this course, again, I would say it's super accessible, fun, but also practical. Yeah. And like, yeah, yeah. I love that you could like do it in a Saturday and then like literally just start practicing reading the records. Kind of amazing.
Yeah. I also love that you've called reading the Akashic
Records. Well, I think it's
like the wooest of woo. Yeah, but
you know, with your special kind of magic, it's down to earth. Not that it has to be like practical. I just mean that, like, again, I think you do like your earth medicine thing, and it's like, oh yeah, all of this makes complete sense.
That just like warmed a corner of my heart. So I meant that earnestly. Yeah. Speaking of things that I'm earnestly joyful about. Let's talk about Gina and her episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely an honor for me to be able to meet her. I can see why you love her so dearly.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just a really great episode. So Gina is, she's a writer, she's an astrologer, and she, I guess I can just read her actual bio. I'll share that with mm-hmm. you guys. Rather than my made-up version. So Gina Cadlick is a writer and an astrologer. She's a native Midwesterner, ex-evangelical, recovering academic, and founder of the now-closed Blue Stockings Boutique, which was the first ever lingerie boutique geared towards the LGBTQ+ community. She's a culture columnist at Longreads and the author of the forthcoming memoir, Heretic, and she teaches a course called Astrology for Writers. And yeah. I know Gina because she is one of my oldest best friends. We met in grad school, being recovering academics together. And she's just one of my most trusted people in my inner circle. And obviously, as you can tell from her bio, someone who's really interested in spirituality herself. And so I was just so excited to come and bring her here to this space to have that conversation about, you know, growing up evangelical, being queer, being a writer. We have like such a really delicious conversation about like creativity and how to access it.
Yeah, I'm really glad we talked about creativity. I felt like that was personally something that was for me. I was like, ooh, I feel like I needed this. But also she just has like an amazing story and amazing energy and we have lots of laughs.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you would like to laugh and also have a like more loving relationship with your creativity, I feel like that was like kind of a big takeaway mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah.
And just hear her great fun story.
Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to my show, Gina.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I've been waiting for this since the moment I had a podcast. Okay, so.
No, it's true, actually. Like the when we were writing our list of like potential podcast guests and dream guests, like you were one of the first people on the list.
Yeah, it's like Brené Brown, BFF Gina Cadlick. Like that's, you know, that's the list. So.
Honestly, both deeply honored and also like deeply correct for me to be under Brené Brown on that list. Yeah, that is as it should be.
So Gina, my dear friend, tell mm-hmm. us what spirituality is for you and how it shows up in your everyday life.
Yeah. So first off, I want to say, I love that you open every episode with this question because I do actively listen to your podcast. And so getting to listen to everyone's answers is just so personally enriching. So just to say that right out. So to me, I think my answer is honestly pretty simple. And it's that spirituality is connection with yourself, with other people, with nature, and with the other than human in a way that acknowledges that those things are all inextricably interlinked. Living in a spiritual way means that the conversation is always going, right? I don't distinguish spiritual or not spiritual parts of my life, you know? Like if I'm writing on the couch and then I look up out of my big windows that I'm lucky to have here in my Brooklyn apartment and I start talking to the birds that happen to be visiting my balcony and then I feel my grandmother's spirit and presence in this place, like it's all part and parcel of the same moment. I don't separate any of those things out as this was spiritual, but this was not. Mm. So to me, spirituality is a very mundane, honestly, very everyday, but very integrated way of living that can also be very magical.
Ooh, I love this so much. I think you just explained something that I've been trying to explain for a long time, which is essentially it's the cycle of like something is so like it's so omnipresent or so normal in your life that it actually becomes mundane. Mm-hmm. I love that explanation of it because I think that's what I've been trying to say. Like it's this profound thing, but it's also so a part of like everyday life that it's not separate and therefore it's the most basic at the same time. How cool is that?
Yeah. And I think that that's a part of, honestly, it's very strange because, and Kylie knows this, we've been friends for many, many moons now. But I grew up in a very evangelical, conservative, you know, very orthodox, honestly, Christian, you know, household. But at the same time, and so a lot of that was very, you know, very harmful and very traumatic. But at the same time, I grew up in a household where God was everywhere. And I grew up also in the rural Midwestern countryside where God was in nature and God was in the animals in our yard and God was in the trees in our yard. And honestly, there's a not insignificant overlap between that and a very animist way of looking at the world that I've more trended to now. So I also feel very lucky, honestly, that I was really raised in, I mean, you know, lucky is an odd way perhaps.
Now that you've done all this deconditioning.
Now that I've done all the deconstructing and the working through that, and I'm still working through that and will probably be for the rest of my life. I do see the benefit of having had that, you know, mundane attitude toward the spiritual and that, yeah, everything is spiritual. We talk to God all the time. We talk to the birds all the time. I've been like that since I was a kid and I was raised in a household where that was normal. And you know, the framework at the time was, you know, we give gratitude to God for that, and so my framework for that has shifted, but that's really been a very lifelong understanding and practice. And that, you know, feels very lucky in a very weirdly, you know, there's a weird continuity to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is one of the questions that, I mean, we've talked about, but I'd love to hear a little bit about the journey for you from this, you know, evangelical, like, cause when we first met, you were like, yep, me and God. Right. And, I mean, you were in your process of letting go of that, but, you know, then this process of like growing up in this like deep evangelical community to where you are now. And in particular, the bridge, right. Because I think that a lot of us have like trauma around religion in one way or another, and then find ourselves to a deeper spiritual experience. But that transition in between can feel like such a complicated place to traverse. And so I was hoping you could speak a little bit to like what your journey through the Midlands was.
Yeah. I just want to add, because I did see, so, you know, before we did this podcast, we have our guests sort of write a little bit about themselves. And it, you know, basically what I got was like, you're ex-evangelical to like witchcraft. So like, that's like a huge sort of like leap here. And I'm like, what was it all about? And I think it's also so fascinating that Kylie, so you've kind of, you met when she was like in going through this journey, right? So you've got to see some of it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there are a lot of people who've done the evangelical to witchcraft journey. That's not that's a well-traversed bridge, at least. Yeah.
There's lots of signposts along the way.
Lots of us are on it. But I will say, for me, I think I got on the bridge later than most folks who I have met. I was a very spiritual child, and not just because I was, you know, a little kid in the Iowa countryside. You know, there were fields on all sides of our house. We lived 20 minutes away from the nearest town, and that town had 1,800 people in it. My girlfriend now likes to, when I bring this up, she likes to troll me and just say, yes, Gina, I know you grew up more rural than anyone has ever lived. I know, like you had to go fetch your own water, which is not true. I didn't, but yes, I know you don't have to stress. Like, you know, your dad hunted squirrels for dinner, which is true. So I grew up, you know, in that, and like deeply connected to nature and spirituality and God in that capacity. But at the same time, I was going to church, of course, and having a very fire and brimstone experience. And being told that, you know, I was a sinner and I was worthless, and being told that really everyone on earth was also that, and that my parents were that, and my sister was that, and everyone I loved was that, and that redemption is only found through Jesus, and that there, that of our own accord, we cannot find any right way to live that is outside of the Bible. And that was, you know, the core guiding belief through adolescence, through high school, and into college, where I attended a liberal arts college. And this kind of strikes the cognitive dissonance, because I was a women's studies major in college. Like, I was trying to find ways to make feminism work for me, but I was also leading the women's Bible study. Like, I was—
what a trip.
In hindsight, I'm like, bitch, you were gay. Like, I'm out already. But I was really trying to find ways to make these two things in my life work, because I had a very strong personal relationship with Jesus and I loved my faith community. And I really experienced that, I'm going to forget that French researcher's name. What's his name? Emile something. But he calls it collective effervescence, like that magical experience that you have when in religious experience in community, right? That also you can have, you know, in concerts, or like those ecstatic connections with other people who are experiencing the almost like hive mind of the group, mm-hmm. as it were. It's almost like an out of body self type of thing. That really just like also profoundly reminds you of your own humanity. This is my very long-winded Midwesterner way of saying that.
You listen to the show, you know, this is exactly what we're here
for. Yeah, exactly. And also I think you're describing it like perfectly, like it's so spot on. I actually don't have I don't have any experience with religion like whatsoever, but the way that you're explaining it is actually very helpful for me. Cause I'm like, like this sounds like what it looks like on TV.
It's also making me think of like just yet another thing about this pandemic experience that is isolated and lonely. But as someone who doesn't go to church anymore, right? I had forgotten that there were other ways that I had this experience. But continue with your story.
Yeah, no, it's a so it's all of that. But then I'm also, you know, I was in college, and the whole train of thought around like how evangelicals are present, and I get it, like even there was this article in the New Yorker this last week about like how, like, I think it's called like the wasting evangelical mind or something like that, like around evangelicalism and a lack of critical thinking. And that's certainly true in a lot of ways, and also I think of my own past experience. I'm like, my ex-husband and I, like, so the man I married who led the men's Bible study on campus, shocker, and who, you know, pastor's son, very evangelical, very conservative. He and I both wanted to be professors at secular universities. Our plan was to get PhDs and serve God in academia. So when I see these kinds of, you know, evangelicals are all like dumb and none of them value into like the life of the mind, I'm just like, you are really forced for the trees here. Yeah. There are huge swaths of that group that you are just wildly overlooking. But I did, you know, anyway, all this is to say, you know, that goal sort of panned out because I got into graduate school at the graduate school that Kylie and I both attended and started my English PhD program. My husband moved to Boston with me. And we waited till our wedding night to have sex, by the way. That's like the kind of evangelical we're talking about. And
shorthand.
But then, you know, I didn't really like sex with him. Not his fault, like nothing to do with him in any way, just a very me, like, this isn't working for me thing. But also, like, I was in grad school, I was surrounded by queers, and I pretty quickly started falling for another woman in my graduate program, which was very much an emotional affair on my end. But once I put two and two together, I was like, I'm gay, something like this does not add up with the evangelical life and everything that has ever been preached at me and every interpretation of the Bible I've ever learned about how I am supposed to live my life. And also, I happen to be married. I've already said till death do us part in the presence of God to someone else. And I take that vow very seriously. So what does that mean for me if I break that vow to my husband, and also I break that vow to God? Like, what does that indicate for my life as a Christian? So that was the breaking point, or I should say the start of the breaking point.
But I'm like, wait, what happened? So I'm like, tell me more. I'm like, where's the story?
Okay.
Now I'm like,
I sit back. I'm like, I know, I was at the bar, like, coaching Gina through this. So I'm trying to play cool.
Kylie was the one at the bar being like, bitch, you're going through Kate Chopin's The Awakening. Like,
I'm like at the edge of my seat right now. I mean, we all kind of know it was, I'm sure, a huge existential what the fuck moment. I can't even really imagine. It's like a whole, your whole reality is being questioned. Yeah. And
Yeah. So I got to that point. And in terms of spirituality and religion, you know, the TLDR on life events is that I obviously like ultimately got divorced and whatnot. And the general storyline that I, and the general thesis that I give people when I meet them now, because it's been almost 10 years since then to give a timeline for people. And what I've generally told people in the years since is, oh, like I left my husband because I'm gay, which is sort of true and sort of not. But all, like I left him in large part also because I had a spiritual crisis over the fact that I was gay.
Yeah.
And I had a spiritual crisis that involved me trying to go to liberal and progressive churches that fundamentally did not work because of this very profound evangelical framework that I had really built my entire life upon. I'd been in these churches since I was an infant and had really also chosen them for myself and invested in them. I'd been a part of multiple church plants, which are like new churches that are being, you know, begun with the intent of proselytizing to new parts of town. Like I said, I'd led women's Bible studies. I had always throughout my life had friends who were non-believers, who were witches, who were practitioners of other faiths, but who felt comfortable like shooting the shit with me in a parking lot at midnight while drinking and smoking. I was also that friend for a lot of people. And so I was really reckoning with this version of myself who had so built my identity within the church and as a child of God. And what does it mean for myself when my salvation and my sanctity as a child of God is now like null and void and forfeit because I've left all of that behind.
Yeah. How did you reconcile that? I'm imagining to me, there's a lot of fear in that, I assume. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess my questions are like, what were the main emotions? And then how do you reconcile that?
It was a lot of fear. I went through a period and I don't know how you all handle content warnings. Actually, I should pause and ask.
I mean, if you want to give a trigger warning.
Yeah.
That's perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Just in terms of mental health stuff here. Just to like for folks around that. But there was a period of time where I was convinced that it would be easier for my husband, easier for our families, easier for my faith community if I ended my life instead of come out and leave the church. And I specifically was convinced that it would be more God honoring, that literally ending my life would be a better option than committing the sin of getting divorced and coming out as gay. The number of, you know, gay folks who've grown up in the church and trans folks who've grown up in the church, that is not an uncommon experience. Yeah. That is run of the mill, unfortunately. Yeah. I felt so deeply trapped by the marriage vows.
I don't know if this is the right word, the power of the church, the power of religion. It's just so deeply ingrained.
Yeah. The entire sense of self-worth is in the church. And so there's a lot of fear. And then it's like, well, basically the TLDR is, you know, the too long didn't read, is that therapy, starting therapy, and having the support of a handful of friends in Boston, like Kylie and some mutual friends of ours, who were saying to me, like, you know that you can just leave. Literally, I recall one friend walking with me through Davis Square saying, you can just leave him. It is the 21st century. Mm. Like that is a thing you can do. And you won't die. It might feel like you're going to die, but you aren't going to.
Yeah.
Really, and again, I was a women's studies major, still considering all of these things.
I think one of the things that stuck with me in terms of thinking about how we interpret God is I remember so acutely that for you, there was this experience of like, but I made a promise to God. That's mm-hmm. like the thing that I feel like was like this like struggle between like, well, I made a promise to God. So if I break that promise, like, either he doesn't exist, I don't get to exist, right? Like, because somehow the promise is more important, which just speaks to just how constrained all these narratives of what spirituality are, as it compared to what you say in the beginning of like, it's your trees, it's you writing on your couch, it's you feeling your grandmother's presence. Like, right, there's like this big expansive vastness and therefore also mundaneness of spirituality versus like, God is this promise and you're in or you're out.
Yeah. I mean, God is judgment. And within the evangelical Christianity that I was within, God is judgment, and God is a very specific, like, you know, I mean, judgment, but like judge, jury, trial, executioner, he's all of that in one. And so in terms of the emotions of getting out, it's like fear to acceptance of that judgment into, over time, a very slow, okay, I didn't die and I left and I'm actually on the others. I'm slowly on the other side of that. And I lost everything. I lost family. I lost my entire faith community. There's a very clear cutoff point in my life now between the people in my life who are in my life now versus before I was 25, because there was virtually no one left from before I was in graduate school. Mm-hmm. Almost everyone is gone because they were largely people of faith. And for them, that meant that I was no one who they could consort with, as it were. So there's a very clear delineation. But there's also a very clear delineation for me, because that's really the point at which I started to choose myself in decisions. And I will say, as someone who had always consulted prior to that point to be a pretty confident person, or at least someone who projected confidence, it was a wild realization process of like really wrestling with God, you know, a la Jacob in the book of Genesis, to realize that I had very little confidence in or for myself, and that it really all had come from that religious backbone and from what I believed through the stories of Christianity and through what I thought was God's promise. So I actually did a very good believer, because that's what you're supposed to do. Right. It's a debasement of self and a, you know, leaning on that promise. And I was entirely leaning on that promise. Yeah. So what did I then do when it wasn't there anymore? I had to really entirely reconstruct who I was and start asking myself, okay, so who the fuck are you? You're 25, divorced. What do you actually want? And that was a question that I really struggled with for quite a while. Yeah. And getting a tarot does the gateway drug, but B, was the thing that really started to, specifically, I got it not, to me, tarot is a tool of spirituality. It's not like necessary. It can be a spiritual practice. It's not for everyone, but it was a thing. And I didn't get it as by my first deck to with the intention of using it spiritually. But I got it to really just ask myself questions. And then get these cards in front of me, which are archetypes, and they tell stories, and I'm a writer, and so I respond to story, and just use it journal prompts and be like, what the fuck am I even thinking right now? Because I feel so like I'm filling my cup. What's there? So
Wow, this story is perfect.
Yeah. I think it's so important that you're here sharing this now, though, because I think there are so many instances in which we have to make important changes in our life that ultimately are for the better, or they're the more loving and healthy thing to do. But the biggest fear is that we're going to lose everything. This can happen like in a breakup situation, just, or changing, not identifying with certain things that you identified with. Like, it's so hard. Like, it's scary. It's so scary.
Leaving a job, moving. Absolutely. There's a million ways in which.
Yeah. And your whole life is caught up in this, getting a divorce, you know, which you also experience all these things. You're like, I have to lose everything that I have right now. Can I rebuild that? And so many people, and I've been there before, will choose the discomfort of staying stuck because it's safe, feel safer and it's more comfortable, rather than doing the really hard thing. And I just want to say, like, this is that, you know, inspirational story of there's a light at the end of the tunnel, but not only is there a light, but you will rebuild and you will refine, you will find your people, you will find yourself. Yes. And it's all totally, it's 100, like 110% possible. Just, yes, you can't necessarily see it at that time. So you got to take that leap of faith.
Oh, I would never have believed anyone if they could show like past 25-year-old Gina, hey, in like almost a decade, this is what your life is going to look like. And you're going to have already had like six-figure salary jobs that you will have voluntarily walked away from in order to work for yourself. You will have a six-figure book deal with a major publisher. You will live in Brooklyn in the apartment of your dreams. You will have a girlfriend you are crazy about, who you were best friends with for multiple years before realizing that you were both in love with each other. Like, we will have a rich and diverse and phenomenal chosen family who are so much better than like anyone who was in your life prior to the last 10 years. Like, I believed it. I wouldn't have thought it was possible. Yeah. And I don't know that I would have accepted that I was worthy of it, but it's happened. And it's what I'm living now. Yeah. And it's not that stuff still doesn't come up. And it's not that I still don't have shit that's really hard. Like 2 weeks ago, Kylie and I were on a call and I was really upset about something. Like, shit is still hard, but I will take my hard now versus the me that would not have survived staying in that marriage. Yeah. And the me that would not have survived staying in that religion. Yeah. And there are so many people who don't. Like, getting free is very hard, but it is worth every step of that journey.
Worth every fucking struggle.
Yeah. And I think the way that we, you know, I think you said something so acute about like, if you showed me what I have, I wouldn't have believed it. I wouldn't have believed that I was worthy of it. And I think the way we step into our own worthiness is by taking that step, right? Is by moving, by choosing ourselves, by choosing the fucking terrifying thing that our heart is like, nope, this is it. This is the one to take. And I think that's how we get to a place of realizing, like realizing our innate worthiness.
Yeah. And again, not that like self-esteem isn't something that I like, you know, like self-esteem is a lifelong,
yeah.
I'm human. Yeah. Like it's a lifelong thing, but I actually know who I am now. That's when my definition of myself was built on self-denial in order to just put Jesus in there. Like, and I acknowledge that there are plenty of people for whom like their version of their relationship with Jesus is not built on self-denial. I completely acknowledge and respect that, but mine was, and many evangelicals, that is what the relationship is. And I actually know who I am now. That's the thing. Like and figuring out who you are and what you want is hard. And also like, we're dynamic beings. Humans are dynamic. We're not static. We're not supposed to stay the same. We're not supposed to just believe the one thing our whole lives that never changes. Like,
yep. Constantly changing.
And I think that's also the whole point about like the what do I want piece, because you alluded a couple times to this idea of like not actually fucking knowing what you wanted, right? And like and having to have these moments of like, what is it that I want? And I was actually thinking about that this weekend, where I kind of, you know I've for so long was like, I want to work for myself, and I sat down and I was like, okay, you have that now, like what is the desire? What is the desire that's a level deeper, right? And like, what is it that you really want? And I think we ask ourselves that question and then we answer it. And then like 6 months later, 2 years later, 5 years later, like we have to keep asking the question, right? Because it will shift and change as we shift and change. And maybe it's just a deepening or a softening, or maybe, you know, the shoes we're wearing are too small now or whatever. But this kind of, we don't always live in a close relationship with our own desire, and it can be really complicated, I think, to, and I think you're someone who has done a beautiful job of honoring that desire when it comes time to like knowing when to choose herself. I've watched you do that over and over again. And it's not always easy, but it's how you get to where you want to be.
Yeah. I do think that after you go through, and like you said, Eva, after people go through really tremendous transformation and these cocoon-like experiences, you know, after you experience, you know, your body getting ripped apart in the cocoon.
Because it is not a nap in there.
it is not a little like like children's storybook of hibernation, and then the bear goes to sleep for a few months, and then it comes. Cocoon is an active, catastrophic place. After someone goes through that, whatever the experience in particular is, I think that your general like risk tolerance wildly goes up, and your willingness to choose yourself strongly increases, and that real like having a real homing beacon for your desire that really strengthens. Mm-hmm. So again, these cocoon experiences, which is what I tend to call them, are, again, they're not pleasant. Nobody really seeks them out, but they will leave you in a much more resilient place.
Yes. I mean, to me, yeah. Again, because I think I have this like masochistic, Kylie and I talk about this, like this masochistic way of being sometimes, but to me, I'm like, yes, I say this now. I feel like I want to be careful because I'm just going to like attract it. But to me, like, this is what I live for, because this is what the journey is. And then what happens is you recognize that you are so much stronger than you thought that you were. You are so much like, anything becomes possible because you're like, well, I've already been through that shit. Like, I already thought I was going to die there and I didn't die. So like, you know, this other thing maybe won't be so bad. It can be so empowering and so fucking liberating, because you're just like, I know there's something good on the other side. And it like deepens your trust in yourself and God, or, you know, a power greater than yourself. And then you just, absolutely. it's like fuel. And you just kind of keep going. But that isn't to say that it's not difficult in the process. Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about astrology, because I feel like we honored like past Gina, right? But you know, one of the big things you do now is you're such an incredible astrologer. And I was wondering if you could just kind of speak a little bit to how astrology shows up for you within spirituality, because in the same way that you talked about tarot not necessarily being a spiritual practice, I feel like I've heard you say something similar about astrology, right? But could you talk a little bit about what you feel like your relationship with astrology is, and how you feel like that does or doesn't tie into kind of spiritual practices?
Absolutely. And I should specify that while tarot started out as not a spiritual thing for me, it's definitely become that.
Yeah, good point.
And astrology, I do think is in a similar space, that it doesn't have to be. It's often lumped in with occult practices, but it doesn't have to be by any stretch. And I don't consider it to be an innately occult practice, actually. And I think that its history bears that out. But for me, I really sparked to it a few years after I started tarot reading. And it was different than tarot reading for me, because tarot felt very personal, and I would do tarot readings for friends, and I did tarot reading professionally for like a hot minute and flamed out. And I was like, no, one-on-one client work, not my thing. But astrology came crashing in, like, and just in that way that some projects, some people, some work comes into your life energetically and just will not leave. And people just start approaching you independent of each other, asking you to do this work. And that kept happening in a way that I was like, what the fuck? Like, I am not trained. And my Capricorn ass who had like dropped out of
shit. Wait, we got a fellow Capricorn.
I told you, I love me some Capricorn.
Yeah, you really do. You are surrounded by Capricorns.
Here, Hello Universe are two of my favorite Capricorns.
it's an honor. Okay.
Just the wild earth energy happening in this.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, like I, you know, Capricorn, sun, moon, I'm an Aquarius rising, so I'm Saturn ruled, like just very, very by the book about a lot of things. And, you know, PhD dropout being like, I need to be trained. I need the degree. I'm not just gonna like start doing stuff without knowing what I'm doing. So, you know, I found a teacher and I worked with her for about a year, and, got hired by Electric Literature to be their resident astrologer. And then I worked with Sanctuary as their content lead and head astrologer. And then I worked with Channy Nicholas as her director of content for the Channy app. And like, meanwhile, was still doing readings for friends, most of whom in New York are writers, about their birth charts and talking about creativity and how it shows up for them. This is more of a resume, Kylie, than asking about astrology and spirituality, but I am a Capricorn, as we've established.
Yeah, exactly. We need the facts, you know, we need the facts.
There's nothing that's not spirituality, so your resume is also deeply spiritual. It's all good.
That's the most seen I have possibly ever felt. But basically, it just kept showing up in my work and in my life. And the thing for me that continued to happen, even after astrology became my day job, which it did when I started working at Sanctuary specifically, was that I continued to be like, okay, so it's my day job. You know, I'm blending my marketing background from the tech startups with my writing, with the astrology expertise. but how is this going to actually come into like my writing? How does this enter into my professional, like public facing career, personal brand? I use the biggest possible air quotes around that. but how do I blend this into the work that like my literary community knows me for? That was always very unclear to me. I had a lot of internal hangups, even though it was very important to me on a personal everyday level, you know, like tracking just as simple as where is the moon? Because depending on where the moon, what sign the moon is in and where it is in my chart, that's going to tell me a lot about what my energy level is for the day. Like, is the moon waxing or waning? Is the moon also in the sign that my moon is in? Because that's going to be like a power day, as opposed to is the moon in a sign opposite my moon? Because I'm probably going to be wiped. I was really unclear on how I was going to integrate it, because the thing about that, that really, most of my spiritual practices, I do not publicize. Most of them, I really try to not monetize. Most of them are not something I talk about on Twitter. I don't talk about like witchcraft on Twitter. I don't talk about my altars. I don't talk about my rituals. I don't talk about spells. I don't talk about any of that. I don't share my tarot readings. You know, I don't really talk about my mentality about God these days, unless I'm criticizing evangelical Christianity.
So what you're saying is we've got a hot scoop exclusive here on our podcast.
Yeah, that's how
you
I do.
But astrology very clearly came in a way that was like, no, you're going to talk about this publicly. It's going to be with other people. It's going to be in community. It's going to be professional. And it was very uncomfortable for me. That's my very long-winded and slightly unclear answer to that. So that was a very naughty thing for me to untangle. And how I started to untangle it basically within the last like 2 years was that I started a newsletter called Astrology for Writers. And so I made it very specific, very niche. And I was like, okay, what's going to energize me is sharing this information about like what I do with other writers. Is like, here is some new moon stuff, only if you're a writer though.
I love this. Jean, just like, I don't know, I love it. So authentic, just like playing to what you love, what you know, keeping it simple. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also because that's what I'm most, obviously there's so much about astrology that I'm personally interested, like historically speaking, that's part of what I love about astrology as a, just as a person, is like the history is so deep. The textbooks are so rich. Like it's so fun to do deep dives on that. But in terms of sharing it professionally, I want to talk about the houses in your birth chart that have to do with your writing. I want to talk about creativity, about Mercury, like the planet that is so important for writers. You know, I want to, there are so many generalists who do brilliant work already. There are so, it's a very saturated field right now. There are so many people you can go to get brilliant readings if you want an individual consultation or if you want like a general podcast or information or an app. And I'm not really interested in offering those kinds of services. I would like to talk to folks who have very specific creative shit they would like to work through. Let's use your chart to do it. So
in a very Capricorn way, you're like, how practical and useful can we make this information?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't consider myself a writer, but if I were, I would, I would want specifically this, like something specifically for writers. It's like the perfect combination of spirit, you know, something kind of spiritual, but for exactly what my craft would be. Like I would feel very seen.
Eva, you write for a living.
Right. So I don't consider
myself literally snorting over here.
I consider myself more of a coach than a writer. I definitely write. I mean, I love writing. I love my writing. I have no problems, you know, saying that like I write, but I don't consider myself like a, I don't think I love it enough, honestly, to call myself a writer. Yeah.
That's fair. That's its own thing actually, right? Like it's people who, is what's your relationship to the word writer? What's your relationship to the practice of writing? Mm-hmm. That is a very, those are our starting questions, right? What are your mythologies about who a writer is? That's a question we have in, because I've taken the newsletter and made it into an 8-week course. So that's day one, is like we break a lot of that down.
Well, that's interesting. Let's talk about writing a little bit.
Yeah.
Since I feel like this is part of your wheelhouse. Like, I guess this is interesting. Like I guess my question is then what does make a writer? Does everybody get to decide on their own and define for themselves? Got it.
My very unfun answer to that question is that it is entirely individual. But it is always interesting though, because some people have considered themselves writers since they knew what a writer was. And then some people spark to it a lot later in life. And I think about people, God, who would be an example? I don't necessarily want to, I don't have all the information on that person actually as an author, but I know of some people in my personal life who are published authors who still do not think of themselves as quote unquote a writer. I'm thinking of one specific friend right now. Mm. And I'm like, bitch, I say this to her face. I'm like, bitch, you are a writer. Like, I don't know how to tell you this, that you've been writing professionally for more than 10 years and you literally have a book published mm-hmm. by a big five publisher. Yeah. Like, I don't know what to say to you.
This is the
evidence is all there.
Yeah. At that point, it just really comes down to owning it. That's interesting. Do you consider yourself a writer, Kylie?
So I actually am taking Gina's course this next round, which I'm super, super excited about, in part because I feel like the world reflects back to us certain things. I think there are people who really love us and know us and reflect back to us who we are, sometimes when we've forgotten it ourselves. So there was periods in my life where like I was not reading, just like years where it was mostly right after grad school, where I just like couldn't pick up a book. And people would people would come up to me all the time and be like, oh, what are you reading? Like people who love me really and know me would ask me, what are you reading? And I would be like, I don't know, the cereal box? Like, I don't fucking know. And I, in that moment, felt like you're seeing the truth of me, which is that I am a reader who is not currently reading. Mm. And I have always felt that way about writing, where it's like something that I have a complicated, like my perfectionism has been something that has made it complicated always, mm-hmm. but it also feels like the thing that won't go away. I say that because I've also had people similarly introduce me as a writer. And I'm like, I don't remember the last time I wrote something that wasn't a Facebook post, but okay. And that's happened enough times that it always reminds me of that, like, you know, the same thing about reading. That's like, oh, that's always been there. And that's like a lifelong relationship with like perfectionism and voice and like trusting what I have to say and all of that, and give myself like space for creative expression. And then I started having all these dreams that I was writing a book, and they were like very specific, like books that I've like thought about for a while. And they were these like very vivid, like, you know, some dreams that feel material and tangible, and I could like feel the like pen in my hand. And it was like, almost like one a night for like 5 days in a row. And I just texted Gina and I was like, when is your course running again?
It's running in April and May.
That's awesome.
So I will be taking Gina's course because I have a complicated relationship to like being a writer, but I know that I have a sole desire to be writing. And I would like to get out of my own way as much as possible around that. We've come a long way and we're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah. Yeah, this is really interesting. I haven't really thought about writing in a long time because I think my job is, if I'm going to be very frank, has kind of killed that for me a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I was an English major and journalism minor. And I used to consider myself a writer. But the thing is, that was when I actually like really loved it. And I think, to be honest, I don't really love it so much anymore. I love journaling. Mm-hmm. Like I write, like I love.
Yeah.
Writing, but I don't know if I love. So I think I really like speaking, meaning that's just, I think that's just like a transformation that's happening because I've realized that it takes a lot less brain power on my part. And these days I don't feel like I have a lot of brain power to spare. So
that makes total sense. A lot of people in the course last time talked about how their day job has to do with writing because they work in like marketing or in communication or in whatever. That's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And I completely hear that as someone whose day job for the last however many years had to do with writing. And then how much energy do you have left over for yourself? Even if it's on the weekend that you're trying to write, it's like, God, I do this, you know, however many hours a day, no juice.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting to hear you say that that speaking is what you really love these days, Eva, because speaking and speeches and verbal communication and writing live in the same part of the birth chart. And so they're both the third house. And so that's really interesting to hear you say that because it's still communication. It's still public communication. It's still getting your ideas into the world just in different methodologies. Yeah. And so it's interesting to hear you say that. Yeah.
What is that? Can you speak more about what that means, them both being third house?
Yeah, I think it's just the having the same. Basically, it means that if I was going to look at your chart or if, you know, I was going to walk you through looking at your chart, that a lot of what we would be examining, and a lot of like, if Kylie was looking at it in terms of like, okay, so what does this say about my writing and what I need for my writing practice? And she would be looking at her third house for like, okay, what do I need for my daily writing routines? What do I need for my daily writing rituals? You would be looking at it through a lens of what do I need to make sure that like I am fed, that my daily rituals support my communication. That's how we would kind of pivot that.
I see.
That conversation.
That's cool. Oh my God. Yeah. I love this because it's like, I don't know, it sounds like such a helpful tool to have.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what I mean, that's really what I use astrology for in my personal life and with my writer friends and, you know, the conversations I have with folks. And so the class feels like a really organic thing. And honestly, like I also miss teaching. That's the one thing I missed from graduate school. Generally thrilled to have left academia, thrilled that that life is not part of my journey. But I loved teaching so much. And so I'm really happy to have found a way to incorporate it, at least in this moment in my professional life, because in using a tool that I think can really help people in terms of like professional development and personal development and just like having something that kind of grounds you in the energy of the day. Because that's what astrology really does. Like if we're talking about, you know, spirituality being something that is about noticing, you know, what's happening in your life and what's happening in the world around you, astrology is a lens through which to notice the energy patterns and to notice what's happening in your body and what's happening with people around you, what's happening in the sky, like literally actually looking at the moon and starting to understand how moon cycles work. And people, I mean, not to be like, I don't in any way want to romanticize like pre-industrial cultures because reasons, but like pre-industrial cultures were much more connected to natural cycles than we are because that was light. And so like we, you know, if people actually look at the sky, can you tell if the moon is waxing or waning? Most people can't. Right. And that's just such a fundamental loss of connection to our world.
Yeah.
And literally the planet we live on.
Yeah.
So to me, that's also what astrology is. It's just really getting me back in touch with connecting to the world around me. Mm-hmm. It's not being obsessed with like memes about being a Capricorn. Like that's literally 2% of it.
Yeah, that's like it's the pop culture. That's like, it's a great 2%, but it's like the pop culture percent.
It's to me, the Capricorn piece is simply the thing that opens the door for a conversation with another person. That's the helpful piece about that. That's why I do like Capricorn jokes on my Twitter.
Yeah. But what a beautiful relationship to have with something that connects you to the world. Oh, it makes me, I said I was gonna ask you after the show, but maybe I'll just ask you now. Do you have any books that you would recommend in terms of like really learning about astrology beyond just like your horoscope?
Yes, I do. I would 100% recommend Teresa Reed's Astrology for Real Life. And I recommend it primarily because she takes you through every planet. And B, it's a workbook. It's a very accessible workbook, so you get to write in it. Teresa's a good friend. I love her. A caveat is that Teresa and I are a little bit different in our astrological approaches. I have a more traditional, and this will mean something to your listeners who are astrologically savvy. I have a more traditional Hellenistic approach to astrology, and Teresa's is more modern. And so that will make sense to some people. So that's my caveat there. But I still find that her workbook is very valuable. A lot of my students used it. That would be my like place to start.
Awesome.
And if you want just a book to read, Demetra George's Astrology for Yourself. So those are my recs.
Gina, do you like wake up in the morning or like, do you have some like regular place that you're like, this is funny, but it like never occurred to me until this conversation where you're like, I'm going to go like, you know, like check the weather report. They're like, I'm going to go like see like what the stars are going to do. Right. Cause the way I understand, like most of us go and then read what an astrologer tells us, but where do you get this information?
Number one, I have everything in my calendar already. I literally have 2021 in my calendar astrologically. So like that. but also I'm showing you right now. Oh, I haven't flipped the page yet. But so what this is what every professional astrologer has, which is Llewellyn's Daily Planetary Guide. And this is not necessarily going to be helpful to someone who is a beginner, Right. Unless you like really want a crash course, because all it does is like list the dates, and then it lists by glyph all of the aspects happening that day by time. So this is my planet calendar, mm-hmm. and I just have it open on my desk. Like, so whenever I come to my desk, I see it. I don't do, I come to my desk when I get on my computer, and I stay off tech. I try to stay off technology for at least the first 30 minutes of my day. So mm-hmm. I don't like see it first thing. Like my first thing rituals are like coffee, light candles on my altar, like do all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just have my planet calendar. It's very boring.
That's very helpful.
Yeah. Do you ever, okay, what's the question I want to ask? When you start to know so much about astrology, and you were kind of talking about it earlier, as in, you know, understanding where, like, I don't even have the language for it, like understanding the phases of the moon and how they're going to affect you, whether you're going to have energy or not have energy. Mm-hmm. Is there ever, I think my question is like, is there ever a point where it goes from feeling helpful to feeling unhelpful or daunting because you take it so seriously that it's like, you're not living in a sovereign way because you're reading so much into, and this, because this isn't just astrology, this is like so many things, and I have a tendency to be superstitious, so it's kind of like superstition, right? It's like, at what point is it actually hurting you more than it's helping you?
I think that's a really great and important question, and I would say that when folks are starting to get interested in astrology, that is a very real thing that can happen.
Yeah.
And I would say I could not do this professionally if I tipped into fear. If I could not stay sovereign in myself, I could not do this professionally. I think that if you do, I mean, I think that having like the occasional, well, that's probably going to be bad, is very normal. Like pretty much every astrologer looked at 2020 and was like, there's a Saturn-Pluto conjunction. And when Saturn-Pluto conjunctions happen, usually really bad things happen. So like historically not great things happen. And like coming into this year, in a very uncanny turn of events, I recorded a podcast. I recorded on the Witch Wave with Pam Grossman the morning of the Capitol riots, and was talking about the Saturn Uranus squares we are having this year. And Saturn is a planet that's like very boundaries and restriction and responsibility. And Uranus is very upheaval and revolution. And when Saturn and Uranus connect with each other, it tends to be like the clash of order and freedom. And we get things like the French Revolution was happening during Saturn Uranus connections. Mm-hmm. The Cultural Revolution in China was happening during Saturn Uranus connections. And I was talking about this. And so I was like, I'm just anticipating a lot of upheaval and revolution this year. And specifically was talking about like anticipating kind of a return in a more like real way of the Black Lives Matter movement. Like specifically what I'm also kind of low-key hoping for. But then literally like 2 hours later, insurrectionists stormed the Capitol, like armed with a gallows and a cross. So, you know.
So there's like, there's like, it's obviously a very useful tool.
Yeah.
And I think it's up to the individual to be able to learn how to use it in a sovereign way. So I guess it's like, how do you, and I would even wager that sounds like when you become very skilled at something, it actually teaches you how to use it in a sovereign way, because you're forced to. Otherwise you become, you're at the whim of this thing. And
I think what y'all would actually be surprised by is the number of times that myself and also other professional astrologers I know are like, we knew this thing was going to happen, and yet we are surprised. Mm-hmm. And yet somehow we are still entirely caught off guard personally and flabbergasted that it is Mercury retrograde. How dare we drop our phone in the toilet? How dare we not have backed up our computer? Like, you know, that's actually what happens a lot more, is that we're like, wait, that is happening right now. Fuck. Yeah. I don't feel ready. Like, cause we're human, and you know, it's a lot less, I think, the reverse. But again, to your point, I do see the fear thing happen a lot more with like clients or with folks who are just kind of starting to get into it. And honestly, again, my advice is if astrology or / any belief system, astrology is to my mind not a belief system, but any tool, practice, belief, whatever, starts to make you more afraid and out of your sovereignty, back off. Like, it's not helping you. It's not bringing you any sense of personal awareness, even. Like, just let it go for now. It'll still be there. Astrology's literally been around for thousands of years. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
I love that. Yeah. That's helpful. I think that's helpful.
Yeah. It doesn't, all things don't have to be for everyone, you know, Like it's not, I don't think there's any, there's nothing saying that like every single person has to use every single tool that's available to them. Different ones are going to resonate more. So
yeah. I love this. This was actually a conversation you and I had once because I was like, astrology just confuses me. I don't know. There's so much to learn. And you were like, well, let me look at your chart. You're like, yeah, you're not here for like structure and order. You're here for these like free flowing, you know, I'm like butchering your words, but you're like, yeah, your intuition drops in and these like free flowing channel like ways. And I was like, oh, like, thank you.
Oh, that's cool. But that's so awesome.
Right. And I think of that moment often when I think of like, I don't know, some new thing that I learned about that I'm like, oh, that seems so cool. And then I start to get some kind of like pressure filled idea that like, oh, now I have to go learn that because it seems important or whatever. And if it shows up for me as constriction, I like literally think of Gina being like, and even though I can't read my own chart, I just think of that moment of like, oh, like not all things are for you and that gets to be okay.
I also super encourage folks to have their chart read by multiple people because this is why astrologers get read by other astrologers. I get read by I try to get at least one other reading a year by another astrologer just to A, stay fresh, but also like you can't see your own ass, right? Mm-hmm. get the perspective, but also I think there can be a danger too with astrology. And I'm sure that both of you experience this as spiritual teachers yourselves, that there is a real like guru mentality in this community and folks like really latch on to one person and that's like their end all be all. And that is fucking dangerous. Mm. So like big fan of having a few people who you really fuck with and trying out different folks. Mm-hmm. Like there's that can only benefit you.
I think that's, and then you also, I think that also speaks to the sovereignty piece because when you see, you know, three different people talking about the same astrological moment, three different people who you respect and trust, you'll hear how they're all interpreting it differently, which also then gives you permission to be like, oh, well, what's my version of this?
Exactly.
But if you're only taking it from one person, I think you can, it becomes a gospel.
Yeah.
We've already discussed, it's complicated.
Oh, I love that.
No gospels.
So where are we at now? What is there anything that we didn't ask that you want to talk about? Like what's on your mind these days? What's of interest to you? Let's just kind of shoot the shit, free flow.
I mean, I really appreciate that we talked a lot about both of your relationship to writing and creativity. And I would love to know about the creative projects that are like really exciting y'all that may not be writing, but like how does creativity show up for both of you with spirituality?
Ooh, this question, girl, this is good. God, I really have to think about this. It's interesting because I have been thinking about creativity more. And I that's all I can really say. I haven't, like, that's as far as I've gone, which is like, I feel like I haven't been as creative as I'd like to be recently. And I feel like I'm a remembrance of how when I was younger, I was so creative. And I think I miss that. And I would love avenues of being able to tap into that. And I think I have an interesting relationship with creativity. It's like, I believe everyone is creative, right? Like I think that's just actually who we are. And I still have these stories of like, I'm not quote unquote creative in like, you know, the ways that you might see or, you know, think that creativity should look like. So I don't know. I would love to open up that conversation as a way to like, how to tap into creativity, how to make space and time for creativity, I think is another big one. Mm. Yeah. What about you, Kylie?
Yeah, I love this question, Gina. I think I've been also thinking about creativity lately in relationship to space and this idea that like, I've been having this real desire. Like I keep getting ideas, like creative ideas for my business of like free mini courses that I want to offer. Like I keep having all these ideas of things that I want to create. And two things stop me. One is like not creating the space for myself to do it. And then two, the sense of like, once I do the fun creative part, I have to do all the other like boring parts to like make it fully happen, right? Like a true kind of ADD woman, I like doing 80% and then there's that 20% like, oh fuck, right? Which is also to say, I have been trying throughout this pandemic to like give myself some creative things to do in the evening that's not fiddling with my phone. And so I like bought a embroidery kit and I for like $8 on Etsy and I bought something to make a macrame wall hanging and I bought fabric to like sew something. and they're all just sitting there.
Totally. I feel like that's totally what I would do too.
I did like that's half so of the embroidery thing. And then again, in true ADD fashion, I put it away because it's like a sharp needle. I don't want my kids to play with it. And then because I like my brain literally can't remember something if I can't see it because I put it away, it doesn't exist. So like months have gone by. Also, I'm like, hey, I was making that really cool thing. And so anyways, to me, figuring out like tapping into the creativity that's not necessarily writing, but it's just more of this kind of like material playful, because that's the kind of creativity that's like, I don't actually care if this like lunar moth that I'm embroidering comes out bad or good. Like my ego is not attached to like, your value is determined by how great this lunar moth looks, right? So I can play as opposed to like writing. I put a lot of pressure on myself. But you need space. You need like physical and emotional and like linear time space to make all those things happen. And I don't know that I'm gifting myself any of those three when it comes to creativity at the moment. So I don't know. I feel like this is not exactly an answer to your question, but it's the answer that's rising.
I mean, as established by my Mercury in Sagittarius, I'm incapable of answering a question linearly or directly. No, I fuck with anything either of you have to say about this. No, I love that. And I hear you like on the space note, and also just the, like the last year I think has made like every professional writer I know / creative person I know has really struggled this year. Yeah. Like, you know, so many women I know have kids at home right now. Like Kylie, you're one of them. Like just at home constantly. Like there's no off switch. Like there's no Tamagotchi reset button. like for a baby, it turns out. I don't know. And
the tire laughing. Like when is Auntie Gina in charge of the kids again? Where's the Tamagotchi off switch?
I feel like I stole that joke from someone, and because that can't be me. It's just I feel like this year has been watching people just completely like reset and restructure their creative routines, but with the expectation of it still producing at pre-pandemic levels. And that's been, and I include myself in that, like I've 100% had to also try to like recalibrate that. And so I think like part of why I add,
I think I want to ask, do you feel like it's necessary to like be in a state of mind in order to be creative? Because I think I always have this story of like, okay, I'm going to, you know, like with so many things, I'm going to wait for the perfect time. And then when I have like the perfect amount of energy and like, I'm in the right headspace, then I'll sit down and then do something creative. And I'm wondering if there's like a more simple way, like part of me wants to argue, like every moment of our waking existence is creation itself. So yes, I get that. Like, yes. But I know that there's a very heart opening, mind expanding, even spiritual experience that I have when I'm actually just like creating. And I want more of that, whatever that is. But I'm like, do I have to have like the perfect time and place in order to make that happen?
So I will answer for myself personally. And I will say that what I personally do, I am in no way saying is prescriptive for people.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a very individual thing. And what works for one person does not necessarily work for another. What works for me is routine, like is daily routine. And so even if what I am going to write varies wildly, and even if I just sit down at my desk at like, or on my pink couch at like 8:30 a.m. and it so happens that I'm just gonna like be on Twitter for an abnormally long amount of time, I still sit down at 8:30 every day. Like there's a, oh fuck, who is it? I forget. But some writer has a quote that like he writes whenever creativity strikes. And luckily creativity strikes at like 7 a.m. every day. Because he sits down.
I think it's Stephen Pressfield. Have you read
this?
Yes, he wrote that book, The Art of War. No, The War of Art.
The War of Art. Yeah. No, that's it. Thank you. Oh, thank you. I was like, that's the quote stuck with me, but attribution didn't. Yeah. And that so resonates for me as a person who is highly I'm highly regulated, like highly routinized, like I thrive on like I'm basically like the opposite of Kylie in terms of how I run my life. But because like, again, like a lot of the, we spend a whole section doing this, like in the class that I'm running, and we look at people's birth charts, and like a lot of my students do not do a daily work thing. Like that does not fucking work for, I think like even like a lot of people, I don't necessarily want to say most, but like a lot of people that does not work. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is a certain mythology to the, you have to do it only when you're inspired. I do think that's a certain like unhelpful.
Oh, almost. I think that's, I hate that, because like, then there's all this pressure. Cause then it's like, you're like, oh my God, I gotta gut it out right now. And if I don't do it, it's gonna like leave me. And it like sucks the life out of it, I think, in my experience.
Yeah, because at least what I find is that when I do sit down, and even if I, you know, and I start, and I'm not in it right away, like it takes a few minutes, it takes like even 10 or 15 minutes, but eventually I do write something, and the whole time it might be like pulling teeth, but usually there's like at least a stretch of 10 or 15 minutes in there where it's like, oh shit, okay, I did have something to say today. Mm-hmm. Cool. Mm-hmm. And it's just the work of showing up for yourself again. And then it does come out.
This feels so, like, exactly like the way you talk about your meditation practice, Eva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like the same, like I'm like, I feel like you could just like swap out and totally. It's the same, which also makes me feel like, Gina, I don't know if you would agree with this, but it's like, in a way it sounds like writing is your spiritual practice. If you were to claim one.
I mean, it's definitely one. I definitely see it as one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would call it a spiritual practice, but I do think they're, and I think anyone who writes, I won't necessarily say every writer, since as we've established, not everyone calls themselves a writer, but I do think that everyone who writes has had the experience at some point where something else takes over and the words just strike. And it's like, oh my God, where did that come from? Did it come from the muse? Did it come from a divine source? What did I tap into? Because that just felt like it poured. There is something that happens when you're in flow state. And like, it is deeply spiritual and weird. and something that, is, you know, is not exclusive to writing, right? Like artists experience this, musicians experience this. And it's very special, like this kind of creative practice, but you have to show up for it. That's step one, is you show up. And you sit with it, and it's uncomfortable for a little bit.
Yeah. You gotta make it safe. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, it's like we were saying earlier, though. I think Eva, you were saying this about, you know, the transformational processes we go through. Just is the piece that so many folks deal with in any aspect of life, and that discomfort of like, oh, it's a blank page. Oh, it's a blank sheet of music. Oh, it's a blank like canvas. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And like, they can't quite just sit with like the first few minutes of the discomfort. It's like, no, just break, just like, you are going to like break the surface. You really are. It just, you have to like, you have to wait it out. I promise. But it you will.
Like, I'm actually like so happy that we're having this conversation. I feel like it's not a coincidence, because I have literally been thinking about creativity, and I was standing at my kitchen sink today, like had a moment of pause where I was like, oh, creativity feels like it's important. And I'm like, that's the thing. I actually feel like I have the cart before the horse or whatever, meaning like, I think I'm waiting for things to be perfect and then I'll be creative. I actually think being creative will open up a whole fucking floodgate of just like connection and like presence and like all these good things. Mm-hmm. It's just funny to think about like in a business context. It's just, I think really what I've been kind of piecing together in this conversation is like, for me, creativity is going to come out as like self-expression, and like, how authentic can I be? Like, I think sometimes when I write very much from like a work perspective, like, is this thing going to be helpful for my clients? Is it going to be something that like readers will take away something from? So it's always from like the perspective of like the audience. And I think I really want to, like, all healing practices I find have always been like me coming back to myself. And instead I kind of want to be like, fuck that. Why don't I just say, do you use that, be a conduit for self-expression, or have something be expressed through me, regardless of like, you know, caring, not that I'm caring what other people think, but you know, it's just a different emphasis. It's a different consciousness behind it, being like, I'm doing this because I want to experience what it would be like to be a conduit for expression of like the universe, whatever God consciousness through me, like, what would that be like? And I'm like, ooh, this feels like a fun idea in which it has nothing to do it's funny. It's like, it has something to do with work, but work for me. And I think maybe with you too, Kylie, and actually maybe for all three of us, it's like, because we work for ourselves, it's like work is actually just like, are you being authentic? I think that's like the only thing that matters.
Mm. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I love this.
And what you
go ahead, Gina.
I was just going to quote Brene Brown, is, as we established, your number one dream guest. And because what you were initially saying was about connecting creativity to vulnerability. And I mean, in my head, that's what I was connecting, and how she talks about how with vulnerability, that's the birthplace of creativity. And how in that sense, perfection has no place within creativity. Perfection is an antithesis to that, because vulnerability is the birthplace of creativity, of courage, of connection, of all of these things that all of us do. Mm-hmm. And so there's no like putting on airs with that.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw that out
there. I love that. A good reminder. It's also like, damn it, but also like, yeah, good reminder.
I know. Right? It's like, God damn it, Brene, but yeah. Also thank you, Brene.
Yeah, exactly. Back with the vulnerability, for God's sake. You know, the other thing that I was thinking about, so one, you just helped click for me, which is just that I'm taking this workshop with my mentors, really, really wonderful person named Will Wise. And at the end of our workshop today, it's been like, we've been working together, this group for like, I don't know, 8 months now. But he mentioned, he's like, we keep having this theme come up between forgiveness and authenticity. So I think we'll have to go there. And instantly I had all of this heartburn. And like, I do not get heartburn, like, unless I am pregnant, like, and even then, and I just announced it out loud, and I was like, well, I just had a lot of heartburn, so there for me, heartburn usually being like an indicator of anger, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, here we are now talking about, so that's forgiveness and authenticity, and I felt anger in response to it, and here we're talking about authenticity and creativity, and I'm like, okay, there's like a map that's getting made in my head that's like, what is the link between forgiveness, authenticity, permission, because permission and forgiveness feel linked, and permission is like linked to Black perfectionism and creativity. And I don't have the answers there, but it's like I can see them all clicking together, and I'm like, oh, there's something here that's not just heartburn. But the other thing that I wanted to say is that one of the things that I think has helped me as someone who, you know, does, you know, is a recovering perfectionist and has had that kind of hinder the way I allow creativity to flow in my life, is taking stock of all the places. So then I create this binary of like, oh, I'm not a creative person, or I'm a creative person who's not being creative. And I like kind of create this like judgment loop. Mm-hmm. I just start taking stock of all the places I'm already being creative. So like a big light bulb moment for me was during my corporate job, was I was like, oh, like I'm a really creative problem solver. Like I'm really good at like hammering out like frigging commission structure for a sales company. And like, that's actually creative work, right? Is it the most soul fulfilling creative work? No, but it is creative work, and kind of taking stock of all of those things. And then like, and then also like, oh, and I do this, I've been making this lunar moth embroidery for 18 months. Like all of those little things, and like noticing.
Or creating this podcast. I think this podcast is creative. Yeah. Yeah.
That helps. That always helps me remember like, oh, this isn't something that's left me. It's just something that I want to cultivate more of.
Yeah. Yeah, helpful reminder. I think it's so easy to get into the loop of I'm not creative, or I can't be creative. Like that will probably be like the greatest killer of creative dreams.
Yeah, and one of the other like killers, I completely agree with you both. And I know that we're talking, and I've been talking a lot about like writing and the fine arts, but one of the other killers, I think, certainly is the limitation of our cultural conversation to creativity in the fine arts and not talking, and kind of like you were saying, Kylie, with where you were being creative in your job, around how the real denial of how creativity manifests in all areas of life and in the world around us, but not calling it that. Mm-hmm. And not calling people creative if they're not being creative in like writing, music, art, dance, theater,
film.
Like,
okay, so this is so interesting, because earlier when we were talking, having that conversation about how I was like, I don't really consider myself, or I used to consider myself a writer, I don't anymore. I had this I saw it all pan out. I saw what was happening was, I feel like maybe the reason I also enjoy talking now more is just because of technology, honestly. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm being shifted through technology, which I never saw clearly before, but it's like, oh, that's why I like it, because it's easy. It's like access, and you know, it's, I feel like less energy output for me. And I mean that like in a good way. So it's interesting to see also how I think modernity and cell phones, technology might also change what's like creative, because the truth is like, there's all this stuff on TikTok and they're like these like 15-second videos, but like these people are being really fucking creative. Like I follow so many just like silly, ridiculous accounts, memes. Like, I actually think that's like, I know it's silly, but I'm like, I don't know who these people are, but they're just like, they just have ideas and they're just like pumping them out, and they're really creative, but it's just creativity in like the modern world. And I think I'm maybe being molded by that a little bit, because the reason I used to like writing was because I used to write letters, you know, and I used to, that felt so creative to me. And I just like, don't do that anymore. And now I'm just like on Instagram doing lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I enjoy it, actually. At this point, it's like, doesn't feel, I hope I will eventually like come back to writing, you know, but right now I'm kind of enjoying this.
But like, yeah, stripped of a hierarchy, it's like you're getting to show up and be creative. So
Yeah. It is interesting though, like, because one would argue, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where technology takes us.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a question that's only half formed. So maybe I'll just throw it out there and see where you either of you take it. But it's this idea of like, I've been thinking a lot about desire and our relationship to desire, and like all the ways in which we kind of negate a desire or push it away or minimize it, or sort of like kind of barter with ourselves, like, okay, you can actually want that, you know.
Yeah, or have shame around it or guilt. Or...
Right. And I feel like there's, you know, like there's a energetic connection between desire and creation, right? Like they're linked in all sorts of ways. And I'm curious to know for you, Gina, like, and Eva, like how does, like I said, it's only half form, but like, how does giving yourself permission to access your desire support your creativity? How does your creativity flow with desire? Like, what's that relationship look like for either of you?
That's a really great question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, I mean, in terms of, I think desire has been the underlying conversation here, in terms of, even if we go back to like what Eva was saying with like, what do you like, what you want to do guides what you create. Like, do you actually want to write? No, then you do something else. And for me, I find that, I don't know, writer's block isn't really something I super believe in for myself, to be quite honest. I know that it's very real for that. Some people have very real experiences of it, but it's not, usually for me, the root of writer's block is either a very real structural problem in a piece that I will work out with my writer's group, or it's that I just don't want to write the thing. Like, and
like, as in, you know, that there's a certain like truth that you need to write and you don't want to write it, so nothing else comes through.
I will say, if the opposite of that, it's a lack of interest. Hard truths, Kylie, you know me.
Well, like,
I'm pretty much willing to write, like, I have my very clear boundaries about what I won't write about that I've like discussed with my book editor, of which there are very few, to be quite honest. But I'm at this point pretty willing to write about like hard truths. It's going to be hard and it's going to be messy, but I'll go there. If I don't want to write about something, it's because I lack fire. And it's because I'm like, I'm trying to write about a thing that I just do not care
There's
about.
There's not the desire there.
There's no, I think I should. I'm like hung up on what my mom calls the shoulds and oughts. And that's been such a useful phrase actually throughout my life to have, because she'll even ask it to this day, like, well, are you doing it because you want to do it? Or are you doing it because of the shoulds and oughts? Mm-hmm. And it's like the latter.
Yeah.
And I think I should, or I promised I would do this, or I already have a contract with this publication for this piece and I'm going to have to kill it and I don't want to. But like, I think that when the fire, and to be fair, this doesn't happen very often with me, because usually I don't commit to things I don't want to do. I'm at that point in my life. It's really nice.
that whole cocoon thing we were talking about kind of gave you that.
The whole cocoon thing really clarified a lot of shit. But when this does come up, that's usually the issue. And so I think that's an astute question, Kylie, because I think that those things are really inextricably interlinked. Like, creation comes from want. Creation comes from like a need to get it out of you. And like, if there's nothing to start the birth pains along,
if you block your desires, then you block your creativity. It's almost like is that the same thing? Like Brene Brown talks about how, what's the thing? You reference this all the time, Kylie. It's like, if we block out the bad stuff, we also limit our capacity for joy. Am I explaining this right? Maybe someone else can do it better than I am.
On a Christian note, C.S. Lewis also has a quote related to a similar concept. In The Four Loves, he talks about how you can be safe from love, but only if you lock your heart in a coffin and you experience no joy. You will experience no pain, but you will also experience no joy. Very similar concept and analogy. I think that's the flip side of the desire thing. Is if you also like aren't in touch with your desire, if you aren't like, if you're kind of like how I used to be, like if you really can't access what you want, if you're denying what you want, if you refuse, or if you're also in a position where it's unsafe to access what you want, that's like those, there are a lot of different contingencies there.
And I also think if you're not giving yourself space to explore desire, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're like kind of the, like last week, Eva, you and I were talking about like the busyness that can consume our time and all the ways that that kind of complicates things. And I think one piece of it is like, you can keep yourself so busy that you are like, you excuse yourself from tending to your desire. And if you're doing that, and then you sit down and you're like, you know, to your point earlier, Gina, you're like, okay, I worked my 40-hour work weekend. Here we go, Great American Novel. Like, where you're like drained and exhausted. Part of it is because, like, not because I think you need like unending time to create, but you need like, you need to have a full cup, or at least like a half full cup when you sit down to write, because you need space. Like, desire and creativity, they ask us for some space. Mm-hmm. And we can't squeeze them into the margins and then be like, well, that's a shitty essay that I wrote or whatever.
Something we don't talk about, I use we again in very loose air quotes, because like women and people of color and like the disabled community and queer folks talk about this all the time. It's like when quote unquote, we talk about, you know, the canonical literary authors, we don't talk about how like those storied white men who wrote these great novels and such had wives and staff and income and patrons. You know, Milton, like Paradise Lost was literally transcribed by Milton's daughter, who made who knows what edits to the piece. Like, we don't talk about the support and space and financial security and the chores that were done and the children that were cared for and the spaciousness that allowed the birth of all of these pieces of literature that are the quote unquote canon. Like, that's not, that kind of labor that enabled that work is just swept under the rug. Mm-hmm. Like, I certainly didn't learn about that in grad school.
Yeah.
I did have a great undergrad teacher who talked about this. But yeah, it's true. And that's actually when I think of my office, because I rent an office, listeners, that's like a 20-minute drive from my house. I like literally think of it as Virginia Woolf's like a room of my own. Like, it's just a single room with these three big windows, and I'm like, yep, Virginia Woolf told me I needed this. Like, here we go.
Yeah.
Space. I'm just thinking, this is like the same thing that we say about insight. Wisdom, insight. It always starts with, I think, a moment of pause, a stillness, a beat. And I would say that is probably true for creativity too. Like, it comes to you. It's like I could go on. I have lots of thoughts about this. This is very interesting. I'm very happy we're having this conversation. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel like I just want to clear up my channel. Like, there's a channel and you like, either ideas can come, if you're like, going back to what you're saying about desire, it's like, resisting desire or being over attached to a desire, I think also just mucks up your channel mm-hmm. for like anything, yes. including like ideas and creativity. So, so yeah, yes. that's, I think, one of the connections for sure, probably.
Gina, what is something that's bringing you joy?
In addition to this incredibly invigorating conversation, something that has brought me a lot of joy over this last year, honestly, is my D&D game.
yes.
And I say that actually in that it's a group of six of us who have met once a week for the last 12 months now over Zoom. And we have played make-believe together, six grown adult queers who live in New York. And we have make-believed a world, and we all play characters, and it is creative joy. It is unadulterated, not monetized, just pure creative joy for 4 hours a night on Tuesday. And it has been the most soul-filling, grounding experience I could have asked for this last year. It is very, very responsible for much of my mental health for the last year, quite honestly.
What an awesome answer. Sounds like, I mean, just good for you and your group for having this. Like, yes, this is good for mental health.
It's been, honestly, like, we were supposed to start our game in person at my friend's apartment in the East Village the week New York went into lockdown. And so we've only had our game on Zoom. And so it's been a lot, but like, it's been very joyful. And on the note of like creativity, D&D is creativity. Like we literally just, you know, again, it's make-believe. That's all it is, but it's so fun and it's so good. So,
that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know people who play. Yeah. I feel like it's something I wish I like got into, because people who play D&D like have such a good time, such joy.
Yeah. It's a little alternate reality, like in your life. It's really nice to get to escape for 4 hours a week.
Yeah.
How about you, Eva? What's the thing bringing you joy?
So the thing bringing me joy is something that I'm actually surprised I've never shared before, because she's a big part of our lives. My cat, Pima. Did you even know I had a cat? I feel like I don't talk about it for very often. Anyway, we just had like a little snuggle fest yesterday, and so it made me think of that. But I also think we're developing a closer relationship, which is kind of nice. So she lives with Adam, my partner. So Adam is like her person. And I feel like it used to be that she would get jealous when I would come over, and so she would never come onto the bed when I was there. And now I think she's like, over time, definitely she's just opened up to me. And I think there's something so amazing about being able to live with an animal. I know that's like so like normalized now. Like there's cats and dogs and God forbid birds, or I don't know. I think having a bird, I feel like it's a very sad thing because they're just in cages. But anyway, the fact that like we can have animals in our lives, in this, like we can actually live with an animal, and I wish we could live with more animals, but the fact that we have cats and dogs is so cool. And I really get understand like the comfort of animals, like why people have comfort animals, because they do something to you like spiritually. They're like they're like wiser than any human. I feel like they know something that like we don't know, and just being around her brings me joy.
That's so much.
She's my first real like pet, so that's why it's a big deal. All right, what about you, Kylie? What's something that's bringing you joy?
So a couple weeks ago, my former client, her name is Amanda Bicking, has started doing this service where she will like channel a style board for you. So her background is like interior design, or like fashion design and graphic design and all sorts of designy things. And she has started her business, which you can follow her on Instagram. It's Mend, M-E-N-D, Custom Goods. And she'll do like custom work for you, where you're like, this was my grandmother's sweater, it doesn't fit me. And she'll like create some really cool thing for you, right? She recently started doing this thing. She took my records course and was like, you know, you're in the process of like thinking of creativity, of like pulling all of these things together, right? So what she does is she like will open your Akashic records and tap into your style, and then like your intuitive like style. And she's like, these are the colors of your aura. She sent me like the most amazing like little like report of like, these are the colors of your aura. These are the colors of like your self-expression, right? So the colors of my aura was this like limey green and this bright orange and this white, which are not colors that I wear or that she was even saying I should wear, but she like kind of speaks to like your temperament, right? And then she channels these colors of like, these are like the colors of like self-expression. And then she like shows you like the kinds of clothes that like intuitively, she's like, these are the kind of clothes you should feel like you should wear, like feel like are yours to wear. And mine was like all these like vintage skirts and like cozy custom t-shirts and grandma sweaters. And I was like, these are the clothes I love to wear.
What a creative use of the records. I love this.
And it was I felt so seen and it was so nourishing. And then she like creates this Pinterest board. So she like links to all these clothes that you can buy. And she does like this really nice job of like, there's like a $15 Target shirt and then like high end things, right? So it's like a range. Literally two of the things that she channeled are things that I actually own. Like that's how on point she was. Wow.
That's awesome.
I am obsessed with this and I need it.
Yeah. You do. She's amazing. It's so much fun. And in part, I think because she accesses the records where you guys know, like there's a healing element inherently when you touch in that way. And also because it's like someone showing you and giving permission to be yourself. I've like had so much fun with clothing, like, even though we're in a pandemic and even though I'm still wearing pajamas 90% of the time, like I feel like I have permission to like wear the things that like I actually enjoy wearing as opposed to the things that I think will make a good outfit, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm just having so much fun and it's been really lovely. And I like kind of can't wait until we can all go out in public again. And I'm going to be like, I know how to dress myself now. And it only took me 36 years.
Wait, so Custom Mend, is that her website?
It's Mend, M-E-N-D, Custom Goods.
Oh, okay.
That's her Instagram account.
Okay, cool.
We're all going to get custom.
Everyone's going to go totally message Amanda.
Gonna go look this up.
She gives you this audio message, like explaining it. Oh my God, it's like so good. It's so much fun. And it was like weeks ago and it's like still bringing me joy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Yay!
Gina, where can people find you and what do you have cooking that people will want to jump in on?
People can find me on Twitter mostly at my name, which is Gina Kadlec, JeannaKadlec, and also on Instagram at the same handle. And what I've got cooking is my next Astrology for Writers course, which is going to be 8 weeks this time, which I am super stoked about. And it's going to be running in April and May. Registration ends the last day of March. And so sign up.
You can be with me in this course, guys. We could all learn how to be writers together.
Oh my God, how fun. Yes.
It's gonna be super fun. I should say I also have a newsletter that's also called Astrology for Writers. And so it's just all, you know, part of the deal that we're doing these days. It's super fun.
Oh, I love this. Yeah. And then you get to like do it with Kylie. That'd be
honestly Kylie. a great privilege that I'm having friends sign up for the class. Like I like
so funny. Getting, I was just like throwing my money at you, like, yes, let me learn at your feet.
I mean, I feel the same way about you. So like, listen,
that's the beauty, right? Of like when you're doing your thing and you're surrounded by people doing their thing, like it's just
everyone benefits. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You just get to learn from each other.
Yeah.
It's super fun. Also, it's really great to have other friends who are like astrologers and tarot readers and Akashic Records readers, because then your normie friends, they're like, I think I might want a reading for this. And you have a million people to recommend.
It's so true.
Fantastic. It's so true. It's like, they're like, who should I go to for this? And you're like, have I got the woman for you?
Yeah.
So her name is Kylie Caldwell.
Speaking of which, I will say, you know, obviously having known you for a very long time, and so to listeners who are interested in the idea of this course, I trust you so deeply when it comes to questions of writing and like honoring the self and astrology. Like there's no one I trust more when it comes to astrology. And so the fact that you're combining all three of these things in one, like if someone is listening to this and they're curious, like you could not be in more capable hands than Gina Kadlec. So run, do not walk, and sign up for this program.
Please. Make me cry. I'm like holding my head in my hands over here. Making a Capricorn cry. Achievement unlocked.
Yeah,
2021.
All right, Gina. So yes, this was so much fun. We hope you'll come back anytime.
Come back when your book publishes.
Yes.
Talk about your book.
We'll talk about the book when it comes out. And also, thank you so much for having me. This was so rejuvenating. You both are so brilliant and so fabulous. And just thank you. This was a complete pleasure.